Do you think your body can handle eating 100 to 120 grams of carbohydrate per hour? That's 400 to 480 calories per hour. Do you think it's possible? Hey there, welcome to the Inside Sports Nutrition Podcast, your source for all things sports nutrition related. This show is hosted by myself, Bob Siebehart, and my awesome co-host, Dina Griffin. We are both registered dietitians who are board certified specialists in sports dietetics with combined professional experience exceeding 40 years. We are here to translate nutrition and sports science research to real life and give you some awesome interviews with a variety of experts so you can enhance your knowledge to optimize your health, fitness, and athletic performance. Now, on this episode, episode number 107, Dina and I actually are breaking down an article that was published online in Velo News. Now, that article was talking about in professional cycling, how these riders are consuming between 100 and 120 grams of carbohydrate per hour, and in some cases, up to 140 grams per hour. Now, that's crazy. Traditional sport nutrition research recommends consuming anywhere between 30 and 90 grams. So how are these cyclists able to consume more carbohydrates? That's what we're chatting about, and we're so excited to have you here. But before we get to the show, please remember to support us by going out to your favorite podcast platform, giving us a great review, giving us 5 stars. We certainly appreciate it. And don't forget to head on over to my snack company, allaroundsnackco.com. That is the All Around Snack Company that I founded, and it provides some great metabolically efficient, yummy snacks to keep your blood sugar nice and stable, give you a hit of protein, carbohydrate, and fat. So we are super excited to have you on this episode. Let's go talk about carbs.
Good morning, Bob. How are you doing on this fine Colorado morning?
Top of the morning to you, D.
Top of the morning. Ooh, you know what? This is going to be a really good convo because it's on a topic near and dear to our hearts and our muscles, liver, brain, all that. But anyway, this is related to a question and an article that we received from a listener about the carbohydrate revolution, also known as the carbolution. And so we'll put a link in our show notes to this article from Velo News, and the title is A Massive Change, How a Carbohydrate Revolution is Speeding Up Pro Cycling. So Bob, do you want to just set the tone for what this article was providing?
I do. I'm kind of excited. I'm always excited for our podcast, but this one is kind of near and dear to my heart for many reasons, which we'll get into. But first, I kind of dig the phrase carbolution, right? I don't know really what that means, but I, you know, carbohydrate revolution, I get that. But carbolution is almost like, okay, I'm gonna be the first to say this. This is going to be a scientific pseudo term that comes out someday in science, and then we start to latch onto and we're going to use, I guarantee it.
Okay.
Anyway, that said, yeah, so this article is talking about literally this carbohydrate revolution, which is, you know, speeding up cycling, improving cyclists. And all right, can I just kind of put this to bay right now? I mean, carbohydrates are an ergogenic aid, a performance enhancing aid. We've known that from the start of time in sport nutrition. I love this article, and I really do. And thank you for the author for writing this. But the fact that like this is new, there's nothing new about this. Now, there are some new things in the article, and that's what I'm really excited to dissect. But listen, carbohydrates, we know carbohydrates are necessary for improving performance. What? Listeners right now are like, wait a second, Bob is the anti-carb guy, right? Okay, D, I'm going to get on my soapbox really quick. Yes, I am known for metabolic efficiency training because I coined the concept. I created it in the mid-2000s. Yeah. I created it for many reasons. And, you know, listeners, you can go back and listen to our early podcasts on that. But here's the thing. I am not anti-carbohydrate. I'm not anti-protein. I'm not anti-fat. all nutrients are needed in a very periodized manner throughout the year, right? So sometimes we do need more carbs. Sometimes we need less. Sometimes we need more protein. Sometimes we need less. Sometimes we need more fat. Sometimes you get the idea here. So I did just want to start out by that because some listeners are going to be like, oh no, that's the guy that doesn't like carbs. No. I have a very healthy relationship with carbs. Let's just put it that way, right? But that all said, I just wanted to make that point. Like metabolic efficiency training is not bad mouthing carbohydrates. It's not the anti-carb. It's periodizing macronutrients so we can use carbohydrate and fat that we store in our body more efficiently. So I felt like I needed to get that out just one more time before I actually delve into this. We good now?
Yeah, I think because some people might just assume we're going to bash carbohydrates and that's that. So, Okay. Thank you for stepping on the box a little bit. Okay. Are you still up there or we're going
to? I'm off the box. I'm on the floor. I'm good now. I'm ready to dissect this article a little bit. So let me also first set it up by saying traditional sport nutrition research in the past, back in the days, was it recommended that athletes consume 30 to 60 grams of carbohydrate per hour. Okay. This was way back in the, it seems like way back in the days. It actually wasn't way too far back, but anyway, that's what we used to work with. Right. So when athletes are like, hey, how many carbs should I eat per hour? We're like, oh, hey, the research 30 to 60 grams. Perfect. Okay. Well now, it's been evolving. So, that range then got pushed up to 90 grams per hour. So 30 to 90 is what we were operating on after that whole 30 to 60. And that's because of the whole glucose to fructose ratio. So we've said this before, but there are two receptors on our small intestine, one for glucose, one for fructose, two different sugars. So a lot of the research that was coming out, I don't even know what year that was. That was at least 10 plus years ago, found that if sport nutrition companies made products that actually had both of those sugars, it could enhance the absorption rate in athletes. So now all these product companies are like, oh, maybe I should add glucose and fructose to try to get more carbs into the athlete's body, right? So science allowed us to push that window to 90 grams per hour, right? So now we've got even more cool stuff going on. I mean, now we've got like the Morton gels and the Morton drinks with the hydrogel. I mean, it's just amazing the technology that is being done right now in the sport nutrition field. And that's what excites me. One, because I just love that stuff because I'm kind of a geek to that. But two, it's actually allowing the athletes who need more carbohydrate to actually introduce more carbohydrate without ill effects. And that's where I want to start with this. So now we're getting up to the 100 gram, 120 gram. There's actually even some research supporting 144 grams of carbohydrate per hour. But let's break this down a little bit. So I love where this article is coming from a couple different points of view. And I don't love kind of one of the messages that I think some of our listeners might take from this. So we'll talk about all of this. The first thing I love is, as mentioned, it was in Velo News. It's specifically, as you mentioned in the title, D, for pro cycling. Okay. So lesson number one, a lot of us are not professional athletes or professional cyclists. So number one, we have to really consider what is the performance or the level of competitiveness. So just because Dina and I could maybe consume 120 grams of carbohydrate per hour, and just off the record, there's no way I could maybe do 90 or 100, but anyway, doesn't mean we need to, because our body is not running at that level of oxidation or what we call a burn rate, right? So imagine these pro cyclists in the Peloton, imagine just the Tour de France, right? So they're burning so many calories and they're eating so many calories. I mean, these cyclists are eating like 5,000 to 8,000 calories a day just to remain in calorie balance. So I think I wanted to start there because one, these athletes are definitely outside the bell-shaped curve, right? This is their job, their career. This is a sport that actually has a very, very high energy expenditure. So they're burning a lot of calories. Hence, they need as many carbs as possible on board. That just isn't the case for like a normal, you know, you and I doing a century ride. It's just not the case, right? So even though we can rush the carbohydrates in our body with some of these new technologies or looking at different glucose fructose, it doesn't mean we actually should. So that was my first point.
I'll just summarize. You can, but should you?
Yes.
And yes. Context of athletic ability, what your goals are. So yeah, professional elite level versus the recreational, or, you know, I'm recreational, but I'm competitive, that aspect. And then yet again, our individual oxidation rates of fuels and what needs to be supplied on an hourly basis in the form of that kind of carbohydrate.
Yeah. And, you know, rule of thumb as a sport dietitian, D, we need to, it is all about context, right? Because we need to always think about and know our athletes, right? So if I am working with a collegiate gymnast or a collegiate hockey player or an Olympic swimmer or a Tour de France cyclist, there are very different nutrition messages from all of those athletes or to all those athletes, right? So we really need to put this in context, right? So that was the first. The other thing that really comes up, because I mean, Dee, like, you know me, like I'm this relationship I have with GI distress has been very bumpy over the past, you know, 25, 30 years. And that's actually what stemmed me to actually develop the metabolic efficiency training concept. Is if an athlete is prone to GI distress, two things. One, I would not rush a lot of carbohydrate going into your body initially, right? So don't be like, oh, hey, like I'm the best example. I have bouts of GI distress. If I'm not careful with my sport nutrition intake and everything, I will get GI distress during training and during competition. So I need to be careful about that. So I would not say, okay, I'm athlete A who is prone to GI distress. I will just start consuming tomorrow on my long bike ride 100 grams of carbohydrate per hour. That's ridiculous. That would not turn out well, right? But there is a thing, which is kind of interesting, Dee. There is a thing where you can actually train your gut. And we've heard that before. And yeah, can your digestive system be trained to handle that amount of carbohydrates? I would support the research in saying, yes, it can. However, if you are an athlete who has GI distress or is a little bit more prone to it, you have to take a little bit longer to make that transition. So I would actually say 8, 12, 16 weeks to actually train your gut. And, you know, a lot of, Dee, I found this interesting because this was, I think it was a quote in the article, and I actually wrote this down. You know, it's now it's about training to eat, right? So training the gut. And you know, mantra, Dee, the whole nutrition periodization mantra is eat to train, don't train to eat.
Yeah.
And I developed that literally in 2003, 20 years ago, right? Because the whole point was eat to support your training session. Don't train to reward yourself, or don't eat to reward yourself, basically. But now we're looking at this whole training to eat a little bit differently, because if you are an athlete at that higher level who does expend a ton of calories and you do need a lot more carbohydrates coming into your body, you do need to train your gut, your digestive system to be able to handle that high load. So I'm all on board with that. But I just wanted to throw out the whole GI distress monster thing, because if you're an athlete who does experience that, please give yourself 3, 4, maybe even up to 6 months to train your digestive system how to handle that quantity of carbohydrates.
I also feel, Bob, this is like Ms. Obvious statement here, but we've talked about this before too, numerous times, like cycling versus other mode or modalities of movement. You know, even if you're a pro cyclist or a recreational cyclist, just like you can tolerate more, generally speaking, because we're not bouncing up and down, or we're not in a pool, also swallowing, you know, chlorine or whatever else. So like there's that piece, like, you know, cycling, we can take more, whether or not we need to is another matter.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think it is very sport dependent, right? And I kind of brought up my example of a gymnast and hockey player and cyclist. And I mean, it does depend on that sport. Like I know, like even working with gymnasts, there's no way they could consume some of these things because they're flipping, they're twisting, they're jumping, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, that's going to affect the digestive system a little bit differently than a cyclist sitting in the saddle, right? Now, again, the burn rate, the carbohydrate burn rate is so incredibly high with cyclists at that level. And that's what we do need to consider also. But yeah, sport dependent for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The next one is just health from, I mean, and I think a lot of people discount this when they're athletes. They're like, oh no, I'm an athlete. Like I'm fine. Right. I can eat whatever and I'll just burn it off. Well, yes and no, but I always play that health card, especially maybe with the aging athlete. So maybe these pro cyclists who are getting towards the end of their career or whatever it is, right? And, you know, they're trying to keep up and they're eating a little bit more, but we know as we age, obviously we have some biological degradation. So I don't know, the question mark I just throw out there is, you know, maybe what is this aggressive, you know, carbohydrate feeding doing for your health? Maybe long-term or maybe as you get older. I think those are questions we don't really know too well. But I always throw it out there just to make sure that, you know, if you're feeding that aggressively during training or racing, are you actually balancing out a little bit with your daily nutrition? Like, are you eating protein and fat and some higher fiber carbohydrates during the day to balance out those high sugar intakes on the bike or during a training session?
Yeah. I'm just thinking of this piece here too, Bob. It kind of sort of relates to what you're saying. Is just, okay, it's back to context, but like the pro riders, women, men, it doesn't really matter. It's just like they have a team of nutritionists, coaches, yes, physiologists, you name it. And so like they're fueling their health. It's carefully monitored. A lot of us don't have that privilege, and maybe far from it. So I feel like there's just a lot of extra here to keep in mind, like the behind the scenes things with the pro riders out there.
Yeah. And I think even from a performance standpoint too, Dee, I mean, how many, I'll just, you know, think of your training sessions or my training sessions or listeners, think of your training sessions. How many times, if we just talk about cyclists, because this is what that article was. So imagine we're all cycling or in cyclists right now. How many times do you go out day after day after day and spend 3 to 7 hours on a bike pushing it pretty hard, right? So again, back to context, but yeah, these are the guys who they need that 100, 120 grams of carbohydrate per hour, because not only do they need to keep up with their energy expenditure, but it's also affecting their recovery for the next day. Because think about it, we talk about, you know, Ironman athletes all the time doing this and ultra runners, but more Ironman athletes, because when you're training and you're not able to eat real food during training, that is taking away calorie consumption planning, but also opportunities. So if I'm out there, you know, I've worked with a ton of Ironman athletes, and, you know, if they're out there for 5 hours on a Saturday and they're doing a long bike and runoff, they just miss lunch. I don't care how many calories you can put in your body, like 100 grams of carbohydrate is 400 calories an hour. That's nothing compared to missing a meal, right? So we, again, kind of context too, like a lot of these professional cyclists are increasing their calorie intake per hour because they're also trying to recover for the next day. And I know that sounds weird, like affecting your recovery during your training session the day before, but it's the real deal, especially with these type of athletes.
Yeah. And also we're not saying that, you know, recreational athletes or recreational cyclists should have zero carbs because it's not needed. It's just, again, trying to find that sweet spot based on your performance goals, the kind of athlete you are, the mode of sport you're doing, et cetera. Okay.
I would throw in one more thing, Dee, is just, yeah, we know our body needs more. We know our body uses more carbohydrate at higher intensities of exercise, right? And obviously I'll put a huge plug in there for metabolic efficiency testing. If you can get that testing done, you will actually know where your body shifts from fat to carbohydrate oxidation or burning. So you know at what intensities you may need to rush some more carbohydrates, additional carbs into your body during exercise. So that's a great way to know that. And Dee, to your earlier point, I mean, these cyclists have teams of physiologists and people doing that for them. So they know their metabolic efficiency. They know their crossover point, right? They know all that. So they know how much to aggressively feed. That said, there will be a lot of times where, you know, you're not riding or training at the level of intensity where your body needs 100 grams of carbohydrate. So maybe it's only 30 grams because per hour, let's just say as an example, because you're doing a lower intensity training session versus higher intensity. So I do feel like our listeners need to remember that it is also your carbohydrate intake is also dependent on the level of intensity that you're doing in your training session, in addition to duration of training.
Yeah. And Bob, I know I keep adding to, but like a few of the physiologists, I think of Dr. James Morton, you know, Inigo St. Milan, like they do periodized nutrition. They'll go through some phases with their riders where it is definitely periodized. I mean, it makes total sense, but, it is speaking to what you were commenting on, this important aspect of adapting nutrition in line with the season and the goals therein. So that's an important piece that we can't neglect.
Yeah. And you just hit something that I just want to bring up one more time. And one on the periodization. And yes, all these athletes are having their periodized or their nutrition periodized by professionals. But remember this too. I mean, we all heard this years ago where, you know, Tour de France cyclists were actually following more ketogenic based or certainly low carb, high fat based quote unquote diets in the off season because they were trying to make cellular changes. They were trying to affect different body systems, right? So that's the beauty of nutrition periodization. And that is happening behind the scenes. You know, unfortunately, when you just read one article, you can't put it into a lot of different contexts because there's so many things that lead up to an athlete being able to actually consume 120 grams of carbohydrate power. It's not like, you know, he just rolled on the bike and said, okay, I'm just going to do that. Like these guys are probably preparing for a good 6 to 8, 9 months before their body is actually able to handle that quantity of carbohydrate. Now, that said, you know, there are, I think, again, kind of going back to when we opened this up, but I love where the sport nutrition product market is because there's so many cool technological advances that allow athletes to do this without having GI distress. That excites me as an athlete who has GI distress, right? Because now there's these things like the Morton gels, the hydrogel, the different products with glucose and fructose. They're really, I feel like these companies are really dialing it in to help these types of athletes increase their carbohydrate intake when needed without the associated GI distress symptoms. So I get pretty excited about that.
Also, Bob, just the like the mechanism for delivery, you know, like the flasks or the bottles or all these cool, like how to actually get that into the body. I know that's sort of a tangent comment or thought, but just I'm envisioning, you remember like the beer hat thing that had like a straw that had like a little straw so you didn't have to like lift your arm when you hold the cup or whatever. I never used that in all my days. I know. So anyhow, that'll be super exciting to just follow along. I don't envision, but you never know, like built into the helmet, a little kind of the race car drivers have that little straw.
It's coming.
Thing.
It's coming for sure. Okay. I it has to, right? Because they're doing it in NASCAR.
Ooh, and you just blink like three times and it delivers like a 50 gram hit of carb.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
The only issue is that, you know, cyclists don't want a lot of more weight on their body or on their bike. So that's the only issue with that's why it hasn't been presented yet. I'm sure it's been in the R&D phase, but people are like, well, yeah, I don't want to carry an extra pound though.
Interesting. Okay. Well, cool. Anything else you want to add?
I was just going to say, like I said, I mean, initially I read the title of this article and I was like, oh gosh, what is this author going to say about this? But I was actually very pleased by the way he provided the information. And, you know, I think it was just up to us to kind of bring some context to it. So our listeners are like, oh yeah, I need to remember those things beforehand. But no, I think there was fantastic information in the article. So I commend the author and, you know, I'm glad this is hitting the airwaves.
Awesome. Yeah. And we'll definitely link up to that article in our show notes for those who want to check it out for themselves. So thank you, listeners, for being here for this discussion, and we will catch you on the next episode of the Inside Sports Nutrition Pod.
Well, we hope you enjoyed episode 107, where Dina and I sat down and chatted all things carbohydrate. Hopefully, That episode gave you some more information regarding the body's ability to absorb more carbohydrates. It's absolutely possible. It should be done strategically and with a plan, not just, you know, increasing carbohydrates like crazy with no reason and no structure or plan, but it's definitely possible. The body is an amazing, amazing thing. Stay tuned for next week's episode when we sit down and talk with Shannon O'Grady all about nutrition for combat sports. Now, specifically, we're going to be talking about jiu-jitsu. Shannon is a highly decorated jiu-jitsu athlete, so we wanted to sit down and chat with her regarding that. Now, if you have a question regarding anything sports nutrition related, we'd love to chat about everything from supplements to carbohydrates to protein, fat, combat nutrition, you name it, endurance. All you have to do is email us. Here's our email address. Hello@insidesportsnutrition.com. Dina and I absolutely love fielding your questions. We'll probably turn your questions into a future Ask Us Anything episode. So please hit us up, shoot us an email. You can also catch us on Instagram or Facebook. Now, we would also love your support in helping us promote our podcast. If you could go to your podcast platform of choice, give us a 5-star rating, submit a review, that would be amazing. And don't forget to head on over to our website, insidesportsnutrition.com, for all of our show notes and our deals. Now, for more information about what Dina and I do in our sport nutrition practices, head on over to nutritionmechanic.com. That is Dina's business. And head on over to energyperformance.com. That's energyperformance.com. And that's my sport nutrition business. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the hosts and the guests involved and not represent a replacement for medical consultation with your doctor. The information and opinions provided here are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or medical condition. This podcast is for information, education, and entertainment purposes only.